Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Monday, April the 11th. And I say again, it is Monday. And for me, Mondays mean starting the week off with Jimmy Sexton of the Esquire Group, who is based in Dubai. And we have been gradually working our way through a discussion of the 27 lessons of the great tax scholar, Charles W. Adams. But today we're going to take a slight diversion to talk about current events and possibly relate those to the observations of Mr. Adams. And the last week, of course, the media in the UK has been completely consumed by the tax activities of the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak. And that is our topic today. I'm dying to get Jimmy's thoughts on this. So, Jimmy, how are you today?
I'm fantastic, John. Good to be back on our regular schedule, and really looking forward to this topic, as it's one I know quite a bit about.
Well, what a timely moment! I mean, you know, we've been off here for a couple of weeks, but all right. So basically, although there are many aspects to this, I mean, this is the problem with any kind of tax problem. You know, it starts with one thing and leads to the next and leads to the next. But apparently this has started with his wife claiming to be a non-dom, meaning not domiciled in the UK, and therefore being lawfully permitted to exclude from her taxable income certain income sourced outside the United Kingdom. So, Jimmy, why don't we begin with, maybe you can explain your understanding of the non-dom rules.
Well, the UK, you know, like the US estate tax differentiates between residency and domicile. So does the UK's tax system. But one of the advantages that you have is you can be what they call a resident non-domicile, meaning that you're a resident for UK tax purposes. You're allowed to live there on a continual basis. You know, you're liable for taxes on your earned on your income earned within the UK on a worldwide basis, but basically your unearned foreign income that you do not bring into the UK is completely exempt from UK income tax. So, you know, for example, if you had let's just say you had a Swiss portfolio account with, you know, $100 million in it that was making $5-10 million a year, that $5-10 million a year that is being earned in that account is completely tax-free in the UK. And I mean, this is, and you can be a non-dom, I believe, for 15 years. And then after which point you then become domiciled and you become liable for tax on your worldwide income, you know, just like you know, let's say normal tax residents. I mean, this is one of the things that's sort of a, you know, the UK is not generally considered a tax-friendly location. I mean, it has a low corporate tax rate, but HMRC is highly aggressive in the way they implement the tax laws. But I mean, one of the reasons that the UK is such a an expensive and wealthy country, and that there's so much wealth and there, is precisely because of this law. Because there's a lot of wealthy people that reside there because it allows them to live in a first world country. You can travel anywhere from Heathrow. I mean, up until recently, you were even in an EU member country, and that if you were a resident there, you know, you had very good freedom of movement in the EU. But, you know, you're only paying tax on what you're bringing into the UK.
Okay, so that would explain why the UK is such an attractive destination for immigration, in part, wouldn't it?
No, listen, it absolutely is. And then, you know, beyond that, it's one of the few countries like the United States and I believe Canada too, where if you're born there, you're automatically a citizen, right? So you have a lot of wealthy people from, you know, let's say third world countries that get residents there. They're only paying tax on what they earn in country or what they bring into the country, which is, and even when you move there, there's something classified as clean capital, right? It's a very complex calculation. But basically, at the time you become resident, you calculate your clean capital. And your clean capital you can bring into the UK tax-free, but anything above your clean capital then would be taxed, but then only to the extent you bring it in, right? So it's very tax advantaged. But then it also gives your children, especially if you're from a third world country, it allows your children who are born in the UK to become UK citizens.
Yeah, that is clearly a real advantage, I think. Multiple citizenships are becoming more and more valuable.
I mean, for sure. I mean, this is one of the reasons why you see it, saw so many wealthy Russians there.
London grad.
For sure. Arabs, Asians, Indians. A lot of wealthy people have set up shop there. Matter of fact, it's a quite popular destination for covered expats who give up their U.S. citizenship and then have significant wealth from income from passive income.
Well, yeah. So again, it shows you the relationship between immigration incentives and tax. I mean, it really is. It's one of these golden visa programs, right? But it's not quite described that way, for whatever reason.
No, I mean, the U.K. is sort of an oxymoron in the way that, they really sort of, they're always at the center of the transparency and, tax everybody to death. But in reality, I mean, I think they have an 18% corporate tax rate with no withholding taxes in this non-dom program. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's kind of, if you're not a UK citizen that you've been born and raised there and is sort of automatically domiciled, it has a lot of advantages.
Well, it's very much like the U.S., isn't it? If you look at the expatriation rules, where dual citizens from birth get advantages that sort of mainstream Americans don't.
Yep, for sure.
All right, so let's talk about what's happened for the last week. I mean, recognizing that neither you nor I were there, and therefore we're relying on the media for this. But what's your take on all of this? So Mr. Sunak's wife, as I understand it, is an Indian national, apparently a very wealthy woman in her own right. The father, I believe, was the founder of Infosys. And nobody has contested the claim or the statement of fact that she was treating herself as a non-dom in the UK for purposes of taxation. So she's not only living in the UK, she's married to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, second most powerful position in the government there. She's highly visible. I could understand why a lot of people would be really offended by this, that somehow she doesn't, she doesn't have to pay tax on the income for most of her wealth, but, the people who cut their grass do.
Look, let me start by saying, I believe that, based on what I've read, I believe that she's broken no laws.
Agree. I agree. By the way, for the record, I agree completely, totally. On that.
However, I can
say that, the chances are 99% of this income is in fact taxed somewhere. Okay. India, whatever the source. So,
even if it's not, she's not breaking the law, right? At least not in the UK. But I could definitely understand how people would be offended by it, right? Here's the thing that I think, I think from a political standpoint, it's an easy thing to attack and it's hard to defend. But I think what, as you said, the average guy who's cutting his lawn has to pay taxes on everything. I think one of the things that the UK is missing, or the general population of the UK is missing is, look, these people didn't come, most of these non-doms did not come to the UK because they love the UK, right? They came to the UK specifically because they're afforded this tax benefit, right? Because it allows them to have this benefit and live in a first world country. Now, the benefit that the UK gets is these people are generally not draining services from the government and are also contributing a very large amount to the economy. I mean, the wealthy people there, they're buying houses, they're buying cars, they're going out to eat, they're buying handbags, they're buying all kinds of fancy stuff, airfare, whatever else, that is going into the UK economy that wouldn't otherwise be going into the UK economy. And this non-dom thing comes up every 5 or 6 years, and they want to make big alterations to it. But I can guarantee you, if they do, they're going to realize what benefits they were receiving besides the tax, because there'll be a massive flight of wealth from the UK. I mean, real estate prices will plummet in high-end areas.
Another way of looking at it is that basically, if they don't come to the UK, it's not as if the government is losing anything. But if they do, they're getting the benefit of all their local spending and, of course, the ability to tax, you know, the income that is earned in the UK. But, you know, I never thought of this until, well, I hadn't thought about it a great deal till this started. But it does seem to me that although this is expressed in the language of tax, it's really more akin to an investment migration program.
Sure.
You know, I think that the mistake that Canada made was, giving out all these permanent resident visas and then, claiming that they're going to tax them all on their worldwide income, if they meet the tax residency rules. So it's fascinating stuff, to be sure. Now, focusing on the outrage of the average person, let's take a step back. What I have read is that her claim that she is a non-dom is primarily based on the fact she's not a British citizen, but a citizen of India.
So my understanding is that if you are a UK citizen, that you're presumed to be domiciled in the UK if you're resident there.
Rebuttable presumption. Hard to rebut, but a rebuttable.
Yeah, that's yes, that is my understanding. But the thing about the UK is, my understanding is it's not like you apply for non-dom status, right? If you become a resident of the UK and you're not a citizen of the UK, you automatically fall into the status, right?
You probably automatically fall into it, but you do have to check the box apparently on your tax return.
Yes, on the tax return. But when you become resident, you just automatically, you're automatically considered non-domiciled, right? It's just the way it works. If you become a resident and you're not from there, they just assume you're not domiciled. Now, most of the people that are living in the UK, that are not citizens, it doesn't really make a big difference, right? Because they're there as employees and they're making all of their money from within the UK, so they have to pay taxes on it anyway, right? It's only, this wealthy population that actually derives any benefit from this non-dom status.
Right.
But
the outrage on this thing seems to be largely what? She's a non-dom because she's not a British citizen? What does citizenship have to do with this? Why does the fact she's not a British citizen means that somehow she shouldn't pay tax on this? So, I mean, isn't this, the way I read this, although not expressed in this way, the outrage, the public outrage, is really an indictment of citizenship taxation, right? It's saying citizenship shouldn't have anything to do with the issue. It should be residents. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I would agree with that statement.
Yeah, so as I put up on a Twitter thing last couple of days was, I mean, really the British public is making the argument against citizenship taxation better than Americans abroad are by saying, well, come on, her citizenship has nothing to do with the fact she lives here. I can see her breathing, you know, et cetera. This is not, you know, is not fair.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, from a fairness standpoint, if I'm the average British citizen that's subject to worldwide taxation, right, it's absolutely offensive. But, you know, here's the thing that I find really interesting, because a lot of times I think that it's interesting how different countries react to this, right? Because you have some place like Switzerland, right? Which, okay, they don't have a non-dom program, but they have a flat tax deal, right? So you can, if you're, you know, you can move to Switzerland and negotiate to pay some flat tax per year, and all your, it doesn't matter how much money you're earning outside of Switzerland, right? You can make $1 billion a year and won't be taxed in Switzerland, right? Which you would think would also be offensive to the average Swiss citizen that's paying taxes on their worldwide income. But the Swiss see it completely differently. I have never met a Swiss person that A, is not aware of this practice, right? Where it seems as the UK population is a little bit uneducated about it and has become very surprised by all of this. Whereas in Switzerland, they're all educated about it. I've never met a Swiss person that doesn't know about this practice, and every single one of them is in favor of it because they understand that the benefits, because they look at it that, look, these rich people, they come here, they buy our houses, they spend our money. If we didn't offer this benefit, they would go somewhere else and our economy would be worse off.
You know, that's very interesting. I wonder if another way of looking at it is that in the UK, in the US, in Canada, certainly, the taxation is seen as a weapon, a punitive thing against people, right? Maybe in Switzerland it's not. Maybe in Switzerland the general public sees taxation as just, you know, how do we collectively pay our bills and have the society we want? I mean, that is clearly not how taxation is seen in the United States, UK, or Canada. Clearly.
I would argue in most countries, right? I mean, I think the Swiss are very much an anomaly in that way.
Why do you think they're like that? I mean, that's interesting, right? Isn't the US more of a democracy, this sort of pure representative democracy? Is it something else? Is it that the cantons can compete against each other directly? What is it?
I think it's a combination, but I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's a direct democracy, right? Spending has to be voted on, taxes have to be voted on. And I think that the Swiss hold themselves to a very high standard, even amongst the citizens, right? So I think I think the population is well educated and they know what's going on because they're expected to vote on it, right? I mean, they can't pawn it off that their representative didn't do what they wanted them to do, right? Like, I mean, it falls on their shoulders, and I think that they take that responsibility seriously.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Now, what do you think of the decision? I presume it was a family decision announced to simply pay British tax on these dividends.
They're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it to appease the public for the benefit of her husband. I mean, clearly.
Right. Yeah, no question about that. Good idea, bad idea? Does it sort of, you know, detract from the simple fact that this is completely legal?
It's a good question. I don't know. I think that
whether it's a going forward basis or, you know, retroactively. I mean, I would not want to be in his position. This is a problem. you know, particularly as I understand they're trying to raise taxes there. Another interesting dimension to this is that it also came out in this whole discussion that both he and his wife have had green cards and apparently had green cards during the period that he was the chancellor.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, that is interesting, isn't it? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I wasn't aware of that fact until you shared it with me earlier today.
Well, good. Then you haven't had time to think about it. So we got stream of consciousness analysis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I wonder if he has to report any government bank accounts he signs on his F-bar.
That is that I see as a problem, actually. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Look, I mean, if one or both of them were green card holders, then I mean, certainly they have a tax compliance obligation in the United States. And certainly and that brings up an interesting question, right? Because presumably as a green card holder, her income that was generated by her wealth should have been taxed in the United States. In which case this decision to go ahead and pay the tax in the UK may not really wind up in much money for the UK if there's a foreign tax credit for taxes paid in the United States.
Well, apparently they've given back green cards, but my impression, and all I have are impressions from looking at the way this has been reported in the media, is they must have been living in the UK and using some kind of treaty tiebreak provision, right, where they're...
Well, but doesn't that automatically result in the abandonment of the green card? And that's my understanding.
Long-term resident.
Only if you're...
Are we talking tax or immigration? No, it doesn't automatically. It doesn't automatically, but it's a... Okay, so to be clear what we're talking about. So you have a green card, and of course, the legal test is you have to intend to live permanently in the United States. So the question is, if you take a treaty tiebreak provision, you know, there's two issues. How does it affect it from an immigration status, a tax status? From an immigration status, you know, I mean, I think it could be construed as evidence that you've lost your intention to reside in the United States. It doesn't necessarily have to be true. From a tax status, though, if you're a long-term resident, meaning 8 out of the last 15 years, prevailing view is that it's an expatriation for tax purposes. So, I mean, that would be a disaster for these people. So I would have to think they were not long-term residents. The other thing about it is that any year that you use the tax treaty to claim residence in another country does not count towards the 8 out of the 15 rule. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know, but this is what I find particularly interesting about this, right, is that you've got this couple and clearly tax residents of the UK, clearly. Okay. Clearly tax residents of the United States just by holding the green card. What's interesting is that they're using the fact of tax residency in the U.S. to be, you know, to say, well, I'm a dual tax resident, therefore can use the treaty to take a tiebreak election, meaning that she's a tax resident of the U.K., but at the same time saying, although I'm a tax resident of the U.K., I'm not domiciled here, so I can take the non-dom election.
Well, so this brings up another interesting point, right? And I'm certainly not a U.K. tax expert, although I have had, you know, some experience with them, especially involving non-doms in my business.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that if you are a non-dom, that for the most part, tax treaties are unavailable to you in a lot of ways, because this is because there's a presumption, because when you are a non-dom, you're taxed based on what they call the remittance basis, right? It's what you're remitting.
If you bring it in.
Correct. And there's some, in two different tax opinions that I've read from two different advisors there, you know, there's this presumption that if you're on the remittance basis, you know, you're not really a resident for tax purposes. or there's some sort of distinction there that, that basically the treaties more or less become unusable. Now, they didn't say, listen, non-dom, no treaty, but there was a much more careful and nuanced analysis that was required to determine whether or not you could access the tax treaties. And the result was that in most cases, you could not.
Now, that is fascinating. That I have not heard of at all. But again, I'm certainly not an expert on the non-dom thing. But that is that, you know, one more thing to worry about.
But then again, you know, I wonder if somehow the treaty would apply differently if you were just trying to determine residency rather than, you know, trying to take tax credits and stuff like that. I don't know. It's a very interesting.
It's an enormous, well, you know, it just shows you how, you know, this starts with one issue and all of a sudden it cascades into all this other stuff. But I mean, it would seem to me, I could not believe, all right, that they were holding the green cards and not taking a treaty election on that. Otherwise, all this income would be subject to U.S. tax, as you point out. And we all know the kind of result where that goes, right?
Yeah.
So, my God, this is interesting stuff. I think that they need your services, is what I think.
They should definitely call me.
Yeah.
I mean, for them, my fee's $20 million.
Isn't that interesting? My God. So I was reading, I woke up this morning to the news that apparently Rishi Sunak has requested a public inquiry, a governmental inquiry into the propriety of his tax status and stuff.
Who requested this?
He did himself. He did.
Oh,
himself.
Okay.
I think that was a great mistake. Personally,
yeah, for sure. Listen, I mean, never leave it up to the tax authorities. They're not going to give you the answer you want.
I think that's probably right. And it seems to me that we've got more than UK tax authorities possibly here.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he thinks he's doing.
I think at this point he's doing damage control. And I think he's probably acting more on emotion of what he thinks will look good rather than on sound decision making. And my guess is that a lot of these decisions that they make, they're going to regret down the road.
In other words, he's reacting rather than responding. You do not
for sure
act in a situation like this. I mean, I don't even, I mean, I wonder, he probably hasn't had a good, you know, discussion with any counsel on this, but there's a lot more issues here than I think he thinks there are.
Oh, 100%. And believe me, the tax authorities will find them all.
Jimmy, you're being too kind. Not only do they find them all, but they will invent new ones, okay, that are probably not even issues. On that note, great discussion. How would people get a hold of you?
EsquireGroup.com.
All right. And I think this discussion illustrates that there are yet more reasons to worry about these things. And I will conclude with the title of a post that I once wrote. I want to get whether you agree or not. But Jimmy, would you say that in the 21st century, the most interesting thing about somebody is really their tax residency?
I mean, it is for me, right? I'll tell you, and it's really funny because over the years, a lot of my clients have become very good friends. So, I mean, a lot of the circles that I hang out in are of a much higher economic level than my own. But it's interesting when you're sitting at parties or around dinner tables that the discussion is probably 60 to 70% about where you're resident, where your company's resident, where your trust is. But where you're a resident and what the new upcoming place is to become a resident is really at the forefront of conversation, and everybody's, you know, sharing the new things about Bahrain or the new program here, or the new something there. And people are just getting it just in case their current residency turns out to be no good soon, that they have a backup, you know?
It's amazing.
I mean, this is something that the wealthy are acutely aware of.
Amazing how prevalent the role of taxation is. What do you think Charles Adams would say if he were involved in our discussion 30 years later? What do you think? He'd probably say, I told you so.
I think so. And it would be a well-deserved I told you so. And I would hope that he thoroughly enjoyed it.
Exactly. All right. Well, this has been great. We will pick it up next week. So thanks, Jimmy. Great discussion as always.
Thanks.